Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, this evening, our first hour, we're going to have with us Barry Shamish, who's a Jewish patriot who loves Israel and has spent many, many years of his life trying to educate the Israeli people about the fact that they are being betrayed by people at the highest echelons of their government. And those of you who aren't interested, by me, aren't aware of his material on the murder of Prime Minister Rabin, it's classic. And I think he's convinced probably half of the people in Israel that Rabin was actually killed not by the so-called lone assassin, nut assassin, but by members of the Israeli Security Department. And but that's another entirely different story. Anyway, of course, Barry came under tremendous personal attack in Israel because he was trying to bring out the truth about what's going on today. He was forced to come to America and then go to Canada, where he's living at the present time. But he always has fascinating information, and of course the Near East really is just a cup of trembling. It's ready to explode. Israel is surrounded by enemies, certainly in the south. You have Hamas and Fatah. They may be quarreling among themselves, but both of them hate Israel. That's in the north. You have Hezbollah there in Lebanon, which is being rearmed with sophisticated rockets by Syria and Iran in preparation for the next war. Syria is preparing for a war as well. And well, with that as the background, Barry Shamish, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, what was this about a recent meeting that we hadn't heard of here in the United States?
Amazing. You did receive my email, I hope.
Well, I didn't get a chance to, but it's probably up on my computer.
Okay, then I'll have to read it.
All right, go ahead.
Here it is. It reads the following. Madrid. King Juan Carlos and Queen Sofia of Spain Thursday opened in Madrid the Arab House and Spanish political conference with the participation of Foreign Minister Walid Al-Mualem and Foreign Ministers of Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Tunisia, Yemen, Iraq, and Jordan. Apparently Spain has got an Arab name for a foreign minister, Walid Al-Mualem. King Carlos, who heads Council of Secretaries in the Arab House. If you didn't know that, that's what King Carlos also does. The fact that he is also the Jesuit-trained King of Spain, who believes that he is the guardian of the holy sites of Jerusalem, as well, means that he's a very busy man. He heads the Council of Secretaries in the Arab House. This is, by the way, a Syrian report, so the English isn't that good. Hope this conference would be the starting point for an Arab-Spanish ministerial forum and a framework for political interaction for reaching joint stances in future. That clearly is Martian. Now, if we go on to English, hopefully, Al-Mualem, in a speech, Al-Mualem has got to be the Syrian foreign minister.
Right,
that's
sure.
What's going on. Now we know. Al-Mualem, in a speech he delivered, underlined the importance of reviving Arab-European dialogue, touching upon the important role that Spain is playing as a bridge between Arab and Europe in understanding the region's causes.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish. You have to understand that nothing is as it appears to be, and there are really very powerful ties between the... well, we'll talk about that when we get back. Go right ahead, Barry.
Okay, now here is what King Juan Carlos and Queen Sofia of Spain in Madrid in the audience with 19 foreign ministers from the Arab countries agreed to. He called for reviving the Middle East peace process with the aim of reaching a just and comprehensive settlement that ends the Israeli occupation of the Golan and Palestine. Well, isn't that great? King Juan Carlos opened a conference in Spain where Israel was not invited. I want you to note that they were all gathered, all these 19 foreign ministers, to hear King Juan Carlos welcome them and their plot to destroy Israel and remove the Golan and Palestine from Israeli territory. I've been telling people that when the trouble starts, if you want to trace it, you have to go back to King Juan Carlos. Now, I started tracing King Juan Carlos and his role in the Middle East in my book, Save Israel. And then it became even thicker. My books are tied to Speed, Labor, Zionism, and the Holocaust. And then in my latest book, Bye-Bye Gaza, more King Juan Carlos. I've been saying this for years. This is the guy who is making sure the Vatican gets Jerusalem. He's working with Shimon Peres hand in hand. And now we have the question, what has been going on in the last month where one day Henry Kissinger is appointed papal advisor, the next day Ehud Olmert is invited to meet the Pope in Rome. He arrives in Rome and there's no guarding of any Jewish or Israeli sites. They all disappear, and he comes back to Israel and he tries to remove the borders, the roadblocks preventing Israeli cities from suffering pogroms. Now we know why. There was a conference. It was 2 days ago. It was in Madrid, Spain. It was hosted by King Juan Carlos, and all the 19 foreign ministers of the Arab countries agreed that Israel must be parted with apart from the Golan and Palestine. In other words, the Vatican has offered them a way to get rid of Israel, and they're going to take it. That's what they're doing in Spain. Spain will get what it wants. It won't be made public. It'll be like your people, I guess, go back into the archives and we'll discuss the whole background of Shimon Peres getting found out to be a Vatican spy.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Barry. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and basically what Barry is talking about is that very, very recently, within the last week or so, there's a big meeting in Spain, in Madrid, where the 19 Arab foreign ministers come under the invitation of the King Juan Carlos of Spain, and they come up. At least Juan Carlos tells them what's going to happen, and of course what they're going. They don't bother to bring in Israel, but they're planning on what's going to happen there, and of course they're going to give the Golan Heights back to Syria, which makes the whole of the Galilee area certainly indefensible, and they're going to, of course, strengthen the Palestinian state. And in the process of doing this, of course, they're going to really weaken Israel immeasurably. And, of course, a lot of people want to tell you that Israel is running American foreign policy. They really don't understand. This is, of course, to take you off the track. There really is a black nobility in Europe. They have been around for many, many centuries. And these are the royal houses of Europe. Many times they tie together through something called the Order of the Garter, which, of course, dates back to the 1400s, and of course this was an occult organization then, and it still exists today, with the leaders of many European countries involved. And then of course there's a relationship to the Vatican, and the Vatican of course wants to claim Jerusalem as the city that it will control. All of these things are working behind the scenes, and of course while our attention is focused on the recent war, and perhaps the coming war between Israel and its neighbors, and what's going on in Iraq, and what's going on as far as the coming war with Iran, why, all these other things are being negotiated behind the scenes, and most people have never heard of the Order of the Garter, nor Barry Shamus's writings about how King Juan Carlos of Spain has been really running things in the Arab world for a long period of time. So pick up the story there.
Well, I mean, that essentially is the story, except how come no one else knows that at this very moment, well, I think it probably ended yesterday, that 19 foreign ministers from Arab states were meeting in Madrid at a conference hosted by the secretary of this Arab house in Madrid, Juan Carlos. Now, nobody knows, and by the way, when they said Palestine, I don't think they meant the Galilee wasn't part of Palestine. I think they view the Galilee as part of Palestine. I think the message was, we will wreck Israel, pure and simple. However, it was certainly not a good message, and it was King Juan Carlos who was sponsoring this message. And that explains an awful, awful lot of the horrible behavior of the Israeli government. Now, I'm going to do, again, it's just a question of week after week. The information that comes in is so dreadful. But let's talk about the Vatican a little more. And I want to bring up something that I hope won't be forgotten. And maybe this radio show will stay archived forever. God knows. But there was, I speak with a lot of very, very intelligent thinkers. There aren't many, enough of them out there. But nonetheless, I'm quite privileged. I spoke this week with a very fine thinker, Cynthia Ann Adams Smith. It's a name you'll hear more about in time. But nonetheless, she brought up the issue of the 30-day visit to the Pope after Rabin was killed by his wife, Leah Rabin. Now, Leah Rabin is not allowed by Judaism to leave the country for 30 days, and then you're free.
And now, this is the widow, of course, of the prime minister who was killed.
Yes. On the 30th day, when her 30 days were up, she got on a plane and flew to see the Pope.
Now, why would the leader, again, the wife of the leader of an Israeli nation, go to see the Pope? That's a little incongruous, isn't it?
Well, number one, she's been accepting the consolations of the leaders of the world for whatever reason they had to admire Yitzhak Rabin. But why the Pope? Why would the first trip this weeping widow takes out of Israel is to see the Pope? Now, this was a discussion. You have to understand that Shimon Peres is the Pope, and Shimon Peres did kill the Yitzhak Rabin, and I'm saying that outright, and I proved it, and I'm not going to even go through all the proofs. Again, I'm archived with you. The question is, why would his employer, the Pope, want to see the widow? And I am quite concerned that there were very serious threats given to the Rabin family. What would happen if they started using the word Shimon Peres publicly in Israel. I think Peres got a lot of protection from the Pope. That's what I think happened. Leah Rabin's first meeting is filled with threats from the Pope.
Now, that's conjecture on your part, but...
Oh, 100%.
But
100%. As I said, I received a phone call tonight. Why would this woman go to see the Pope? Why would he want to see her?
No.
Again, it's conjecture, but when you add it all up, somebody was very, very worried. By then, the thoughts of conspiracy were everywhere in Israel. By then, it was spreading like wildfire. I have a funny feeling it was part of the cover-up. Just to let you know. Yes, and I'm going to end the conjecture right now, and I'll go into something that's not conjecture, and that is what happened in Hebron. This is the week where Hebron was put on notice. It's on the chopping block right now. Now, what you had with Hebron were a series of outrages against the Jews, and they've gone on all week long, and it's religious outrages as well.
And Barry, for our listeners who may not know where Hebron is, why don't you tell them?
Hebron's 30 miles from Jerusalem. It was David's first capital.
All right, fine.
Now, what you've got are terrible religious insults. holy books were ripped up and the pages were spread in synagogues and the tomb of Jesse was robbed, and so on and so forth. All week long, these utter insults. Now, into the scene, by the way, about the fourth day of the insults, arrives Condoleezza Rice to Israel. And Condoleezza Rice is ordering Olmert to lift the roadblocks all over again. She's ordering him to expand the roadblock up to Gaza, the Kearney Junction at the Gaza Strip, which is really just a funnel for new equipment for Hamas to put together rockets. All of this, she wants Israel to stop guarding the country. She gives the order, but something goes on in Hebron that is uncanny. The people are under terrible, terrible repression. The police are not supporting them. The police are supporting the Arabs over the Jews of Hebron. And what do? They go out and protest in Hebron. And I'm saying to myself, well, that's it. They're as good as out. They're finished. When the 180,000 Arabs of Hebron are given the word that we're not going to protect these people anymore, they will massacre them. They're in no position to defend themselves, 180,000 against 4,500. And without an army, they're finished. Quite frankly, I think with the army, they're finished, because the army will not protect them anymore. Now, I'm saying to myself, Condoleezza Rice is in Jerusalem. She's giving Olmert the order to get these Jews out of Hebron. Hurry up. Olmert is obeying her orders. Why aren't the Jews of Hebron going to Israel to make life extremely difficult?
No, basically, Condoleezza Rice. But Barry, is this in Samaria? Is this,
No, it's in Judea.
It's in Judea.
Hebron is the biggest city in the West Bank.
All right, but why are they so intent upon turning this over to the Arabs? She promised the Arabs that they were going to turn this over, and so basically what they're doing is simply undercutting the Israelis who want to have a nation there, and little bit by little bit they're taking the land from them. Is that right?
Well, you can say little by little. I would think all of Gaza is more than a little. I'd say northern Samaria was more than a little. Hebron is next. They're leading up to it right now. And I don't know, sometime in the near future, I suppose all of it will go away. There'll be no more religious Zionism. There'll be no more Jews wear a kippah and serve in the army. And there will be no army. We'll talk about the upcoming war shortly.
All right.
But I want to finish the point. Why the Jews can't win. They simply cannot win. And you have these Hebron Jews protesting where absolutely no one could care less, in Hebron, where Condoleezza Rice, the cameras of the world are on them. They have a chance to make a point, and they're against the very woman who is in Jerusalem ordering their reduction to nothing, and they don't do it. And this is what I've been saying all along. If I can find a way out of this mess, I'll just take it. If I can own a bait shop somewhere, if someone gives me a bait shop beside a nice lake, I won't touch this stuff again. There's nothing to do with these Jews. There's nothing you can save them. And there's a very worse phenomenon going on. And I hear the music.
Well, we've got that. Well, of course, the problem is that Israel is being destroyed, and it is being betrayed by its own leaders. This is Barry's message, and I fully believe that. I believe, of course, the people who control Israel today, the leaders of both political parties, like the leaders of both political parties in the United States, are globalists dedicated to this idea of world government. And at the present time, why, Israel is one of the things that stands in the way. And Israel, as a nation, is about to be destroyed. Unless, of course, unless God intervenes. And that, of course, is the fascinating part of what's taking place today. I think we're going to see God's hand in so much of what's going to be transpiring. Barry, go ahead, pick the story up.
Well, there's another phenomenon going on Well, Israel cannot defend itself, and that phenomenon is called Aliyah, the mass movement of Jews to Israel. Now, there's Aliyah has gone a little crazy in the last, since 1990. By the way, there were a lot of the reasons for this are Christian organizations who have been sending Russian Gentiles. They've been sending the Russian mafia to Israel, and these are actual Gentile organizations thinking they're helping Israel by supplying it with literally anti-Semites. For the first time, you have at least 400,000 Russians with no Jewish ties whatsoever who really just had to get out of the country for all kinds of criminal reasons, brought to Israel by these Christian organizations, and it was a disaster. A horrible, horrible disaster was the last Aliyah, and that last Aliyah, again, was not run by the Jewish state. It was run by outsiders. Now, the person involved, the person who made the decision to turn over the job of immigration, Aliyah, was Avraham Burg. Avraham Burg is a Sabbatean. His father, Yosef Burg, was deeply involved in the kidnapping of the Yemenite children, was deeply, deeply involved in the horrible atomic experiments done to the brains of 108,000 Sephardic children. They ruined the ability of every Sephardic child who came to Israel, was blasted with the so-called ringworm vaccines, 35,000 times the amount of gamma rays that's supposed to go into a person's brain went through the Sephardic children's brains. This was Aliyah. Aliyah has been disastrous all through Israel's history for all kinds of reasons. The only Aliyah that should be allowed to Israel are people who want to go there. And it's that simple. But people have been promoting it. Now, there's something going on that you've got to watch out for, and that is France. France today has 7 million Muslims and about 750,000 Jews. It's 10 to 1. As soon as the Muslims get the go-ahead, they will kill all the Jews that they can get their hands on. But right now, they're not being chased by the police. The French Jews are living a nightmare. They're living a constant nightmare of destruction, of vandalism, and much worse, by the way, of murder, of assault, and they're coming to Israel. The same is true of England, not quite as bad, but it's getting there. And they're coming to Israel. They're mostly all religious. They mostly all move to religious places, and they are coming to Israel to be killed. And this is a message I hate myself for giving, but at least I'll go to sleep someday, I suppose, with a clean conscience. They are being brought to Israel because they are about to kill a lot of Jews, and they want a lot of these nasty religious Jews killed. And there's a war against religion going on in Israel. This is something we've spoken about for the last 2 weeks, are the number of dead religious people.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Barry Sammons. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Barry's talking about this immigration of large numbers of Jews to Israel. And, of course, he's pointing out that there's some people who are Sabbateans, and you really need to look up and learn about the Sabbateans, because they are a clique of Judaism, but they're really not true Jews at all. They belong to a different sect because they have a different God. But be that as it may, many people consider them Jewish, and they certainly have brought some 400,000 Russian Jews to Israel, and they just are not fitting in at all. These same people were responsible for kidnapping large numbers of Yemeni, and these were, of course, Jewish children, and heaven only knows what happened to them, sold as sex slaves, certainly giving massive amounts of radiation. They called it the ringworm children. 100,000 or more Sephardic children had their brains blasted with massive amounts of radiation. And then Barry's pointing out that they are actually taking large numbers of Jews, or large numbers of Jews from both from France and other countries are moving to Israel just because they feel that they'll be safer there. Barry fears, however, that they're returning to the Holy Land, where they, of course, when Israel is destroyed, they will be destroyed as well, because there is a organized effort to kill off the Jewish race, and I really tend to believe that that's absolutely true. And without God's intervention, terrible things are going to happen. And we're not talking about some time in the distant future. I think in the very near future, because terrible things are about to happen in the Near East and the Middle East. So pick up the story, Barry.
Okay, one little boo-boo there. We know what happened to the Yemenite kids, and it sure wasn't sex slaves. They were used in atomic experiments in the United States.
All right, fine. Well, I stand corrected then. But they are actually listed up on the Internet. People can look up the Yemenite children, and it's a tragic, tragic story. What actually, how many of them were there?
It's time to pitch the books a bit.
Okay,
if you want to know what was done, if you want to know, you have to read my books. And that's a fact.
How many children? How many children were the Yemenite children?
4,500.
All right.
My address to get the books is www.lulu.com. Like a cartoon character. Just write in Shamish where it says search, and you'll get to the books. And in this case, about the Yemenite children and the Moroccan children, the Sephardic children, and those dreadful experiments that went on in the 50s, the book of Shabbat, Free Labor Zionism, the Holocaust. If you want to know what they did to the Gaza Jews and the Samaria Jews, and the utter torture they're going through, and the utter pleasure these Sabbateans get in torturing these Jews, and I'm not exaggerating, they're doing it for the pleasure of seeing these religious Jews worm. It's being done on purpose. And they're now bringing in Jews from France, also from Britain, and to some degree from the United States as well. These Jews are being brought to Israel to die. The Sabbateans do not believe that any Jew who believes in old-fashioned Judaism, where Shabtai Tzvi or Jacob Frank, the two messiahs of this movement, are not the messiahs, deserve to die. And this is very complicated, but I'm going to do it in one sentence. According to Sabbatean tenets, the opposite of the Torah is true. Therefore, do not kill means do kill. And they derive great, great physical satisfaction from killing Jews. And that is the whole story of the Holocaust, and I'm not going to do it tonight. Excuse me. Get the books. It'll make more sense to you. Look at my website, the Barry Chamish website. To spell my name is Da, and then BarryChamish website.com. Go into the old archives, and you'll read other material there, and you'll actually get this show on the front page. All you have to do is send me the URL. And you'll get Dr. Stan on the front page of my website.
I appreciate that very much. Anyway, you go ahead and tell us how you think things are going to be lining up.
Well, I know how it's going to... This is what's very bad. I know how it's going to be lining up. Look, a war is coming. And this war works like this. They noted that 4,000 missiles... by the way, today are sitting in the war councils of... Damascus and Tehran, they noted the results of the war last summer, that 4,000 missiles utterly disrupted Israel, forced one-third of the country to sleep on beaches. This time, these missiles are not going to stop at Hadera. They're going to be long-range scuds. There's going to be an awful lot of them. You'll see 10,000 on the first day. They are not going to be aimed at the settlements. They're going to be aimed at Tel Aviv. They're going to be aimed at knocking out Israel's military from day one of the war. I hear music. Am I right? Am I right?
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry's talking to us about really what he sees coming down the line. He sees a war coming, and I certainly see a war coming too, a terrible, terrible war that's going to just swallow Israel into a sea of violence. Will you pick up the story there, Barry?
Well, let's be realistic for once in our lives. Let's actually fight the war a little bit. Now, what I told you, I don't know, I heard the music, and maybe it all got cut off. But the key of what I'm saying is that it won't be 4,000 missiles over a month. It'll be 10,000 in one day. They're going to concentrate the missiles not on the settlements. They know the settlements are easy. They're not going to waste their time. Like last time, the settlements weren't hit. They didn't bother with them. They're going to go for Tel Aviv and the areas around Tel Aviv. They want to get rid of the Jews, and they know the military structure of Israel is in Tel Aviv. They're not going to use Katyushas. They're going to use Scuds and bigger missiles. And Israel is going to be dancing in the streets from all the missiles landing in Tel Aviv. Israel supposedly has an atomic reaction to this. Now watch out if this happens. If it's true that Israel can actually nuke Tehran, well, there might be someone who's got enough patriotism to send a nuclear missile off, and then you've got World War III. Just keep that in mind. All the Jews will die, but you'll get World War III, so you have that option. The option, I think, is Israel will not shoot, Israel will not defend itself, the Israeli people will lose. The army will fight to the end. This will be a war to the finish. You're going to see the army die in infantry combat, and when that happens, the Arabs are going to come over from Egypt, and they're going to come over from Iraq. They are going to rape every single Jewish woman and man. They are going to rape them, and when they finish raping them, they are going to shoot them through their heads, and they're going to see a Holocaust that will probably be finished in a month. It may be finished in a week. This is what happens. The Arabs hate us even worse than the Nazis hate us. And they will rape and they will kill Israel. And the Israeli people are letting it happen. So I want a bait shop. Okay, that's all I want. I really want a nice lake and good fishing. And I don't want to watch this anymore. I'm sick of it.
But Barry, you know, I think I have more faith in the God of Abraham than you do. Because
well,
I think
let all
that
of us
the only hope
out.
Will be God's intervention, and I really think it will happen. I think that we're going to see this because it will take truly a supernatural event to save Israel at this time.
Well, he wasn't there when the Sabbateans and the Illuminati...
Hold that there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Barry Shamish, and Barry is really very, very pessimistic as far as the future of Israel is concerned, in part because of his ex-wife and children are there, and his friends are there, and this is the country that he loves. But, of course, as he looks at this from a logical point of view, there is no way Israel can survive what lies ahead, because, of course, there is tremendous military power, certainly been smuggled into Lebanon, missiles to Hezbollah. They openly admit that they're far stronger than they were before the last war, and you can be sure that the Egyptians are doing everything they can, thanks to the massive amounts of aid they had from the United States. The Egyptians are doing everything they can to arm the other forces in Palestine for the coming war with Israel. And how soon do you anticipate the war is going to be coming, Barry?
Well, just do an excuse. Find an excuse. Wait for an excuse. The point is the forces are being prepared. And Israel, of course, no longer can protect itself. Israel has been made... I mean, when you consider the Israel of 15 years ago and this weak little Israel today with no defensive borders and the kids going to raves, and taking ecstasy. These kids fought in Lebanon. They went straight from the clubs of Tel Aviv to the battlefields of Lebanon, and they got smeared. You don't understand. There is no more Israel. What the Sabbateans don't understand, no, they understand. Look, there's a very, very serious aspect in that Israel's money is now being stolen. And I've been watching this. This is, by the way, the scandal with Olmert, that he tried to get Thank You Me in the hands of these horrible, horrible murdering crooks Daniel Abraham and Frank Lowy. That's a big scandal in Israel right now, that Olmert tried to get them Bank Leumi. But look at Discount Bank. It was bought by the Bronfman family, by Edgar Bronfman's son, Matt. Now, when Israel goes, well, no one's going to be there to take these bank accounts. Okay, I'll make it easy. I'll make it easier. Charles Bronfman, I guess it was 4 years ago, won from this Swiss bank $6.5 billion of bank accounts from Holocaust victims. All the money the Swiss bank stole from their Holocaust victims without trying to find their real families. And do you know what became of that money? Well, it's in the pocket of the Bronfmans. Not one penny was ever given to anyone who went through the Holocaust. They will die thoroughly impoverished, and the Bronfmans have $6.5 billion of the poor Jews who died in the Holocaust, who have family in Israel and America, will never see a penny of the money. It's in the pockets of the Bronfmans. The same thing will happen with Israel. Those who manipulate world events will come out of this beautifully. They will have wonderful jobs in Geneva and in New York, and all the rest of the Jews, all 6 million of them, once again, will be the victims of forces they cannot accept. And if they don't accept that Judaism itself has been infiltrated, and that we are now in a war stage, and the war, once again, is against the religious, without them being told there's a war against them, well, then you don't know the rules of this game. And until you know the rules of this game, you can't defend yourself. So I'm getting myself a bait shop. I'm telling you, it's the only way out.
Well, I really feel that things are really heating up over there, and what we get from these people that we're listening to is that, it's only a matter of months before the United States is or Israel is involved in the attack on Iran.
We'll go to that separately, but the first thing is, the word I'm getting from Israel is no one is preparing the Israeli people for a massive rocket attack. There's been no massive inspections of gas masks. There's been no order to buy polyethylene paper and sellotape. All of this is not happening. If this rocket attack happens, the Israeli people will die because they're unprepared for it. Now, if this rocket attack, God help us, if it involves gas, what the world, then you will actually see probably your little attack on Iran. You'll probably see that. Okay? Now, Israel would gain absolutely nothing by attacking anybody right now, because Israel will lose the next time Israel attacks anybody. Israel will lose. The next war will be her last.
Well, of course, many people, of course, what we're hearing is that what the Israelis are saying is that Iran will very, very soon have nuclear weapons. I don't necessarily think that's true, but I think it'll be some time. But there is almost a sense of urgency for an attack on Iran.
When the day comes when Iraqi inspectors can go to the United States and inspect your nuclear facilities, there may be some justice in this world. But as it is, they're a sovereign nation. Israel supposedly has nuclear weapons. If one is dropped on her, she will drop one on them, and that's the way the world operates. It's none of Israel's business. Look, what we've got now is a setup with Iran. You've got an aircraft carrier with all the fixings about to enter the Persian Gulf. That'll mean you've got two aircraft carriers there. I don't look at that as a good thing, because, quite frankly, the Persian Gulf is not all that wide, and the Iranians have lots of things that can probably penetrate the armor of an aircraft carrier. So I don't want to go into this scenario. I'm looking at Israel, and I'm trying to save my country. And look, I don't know if we can, but I'm going back to that business with Leah Rubin and the Pope. Why would a grieving widow run off and see the Pope at the very first moment she was allowed to by her religion? This is what bothers me about that meeting we started off our discussion with with Juan Carlos. There is something I've been saying for a long, long time, that you have to watch out. The Pope wants Jerusalem back. They've got the man in Israel who can do it for them, and that is Shimon Peres. Shimon Peres knocked off Rabin. And I'm going to say this again. You bet I wasn't in the meeting. I'm not a fly on the wall. Why would she go there in the first place?
Well, because the world is run by far different people than the average person anticipates.
Well,
has
we
any
know
idea.
That.
Well, I
That's
know. But Barry, we're talking to an audience out there that really doesn't recognize that. They honestly believe that George Bush is directing the course of world events, or that Ahmadinejad in Iran, who probably was picked up someplace at an acting school or for central casting, that he's running things in Iran. And that's not the way the world works. I mean, it works far more when King Juan Carlos of Spain is giving directions to the foreign ministers of the Arab countries, or when, of course, the Pope is giving orders to Mr. Olmert.
Well, the Pope is giving them to King Juan Carlos. Now, this is, again, an amazingly difficult subject to dive into. In my books, I take all the meetings. Like, this is a major meeting. If I was writing a book right now, by the way, I will be writing this up for my next send-out. It will be the topic of my next send-out, that finally Juan Carlos is showing his hand. Israel wasn't at that meeting. And if they're going to talk about dividing Israel up, at least you can invite Israel there for her to hear it. And that's not what happened. He's working behind Israel's back in a huge, huge way. And no one in Israel even knows who Juan Carlos is. You know that the week before this meeting, our foreign minister, Tzipi Livni, visited the Pope. And then she visited Juan Carlos. Wait a second. She might not have visited the Pope, but she sure visited Juan Carlos. Okay, rub out the Pope. I'm not sure of it right now. But she certainly visited Juan Carlos. I sent that out to all my readers, but I didn't make a fuss about it. I just put it as a link, double-click this link, and there's that article. What was she doing 1 week before this meeting with Juan Carlos, our foreign minister? And by the way, no one is asking that question. And which is, again, I repeat myself, if they're not asking that question, how are they going to get to the bottom of everything?
Well, I think one of the most significant questions is how could it be that Juan Carlos, the King of Spain, would put out an invitation to the Arab foreign ministers, and 19 Arab foreign ministers would come? I mean, and it wasn't as if he went to them. They came to him at his beck and call. In other words, he is able to really direct the people to come there, the leaders, the foreign ministers of the various Arab countries. Who's really in charge? This is the question, and I would like to suggest that maybe the people that we think, like the King of the Sauds and Gaddafi, and these are the people we think are running things, and I would like to suggest that maybe they're simply pawns in this vicious game that's being played out. Would you agree or disagree?
Well, again, you have to go through each one by one and see who believes in this stuff and who has been blackmailed into this stuff. Okay, there are a lot of people who aren't pawns. I believe Peres is just plain evil, and I don't view him as a pawn one little bit. He's an active, a proactive maniac. Okay, but there are other people like Olmert who, yeah, he got sucked in. And by the way, remember this. Peres wants to be either president or prime minister of Israel. It's now a race between Katsav and Olmert to see who collapses first. And remember, Katsav went to the Rome last year, refused to negotiate Mount Zion with the Vatican, and boy, did he pay for it. He is now being indicted for rape. Okay, 6 different rapes. And by the way, he went on the air and said it was all a political scam, but he wouldn't say who was behind it. You watch him come out and say absolutely nothing after they threaten his whole family. I don't think he knows the rules to this game one little bit. But I want to tell you where I do have a bit of an influence, and I actually wish he would use my name a little bit. People are so ashamed to use my name, no matter how right I've been for how long. They're ashamed of me. He believes in conspiracy. The fact that a conspiracy is a crime between two or more people hidden from the public and so forth, it's the majority of most crimes. That also doesn't matter. But I do have some writers, and I'm very proud of them when they come forward. One is a Catholic. He was fired, I believe it was Temple University, for defending the Jews, and he was fired by other Jews. He's now in Mexico, and he phones me quite often. His name is Francisco Gil White. His website is H-I-R, oh my goodness, H-I-R.com, I believe. H-I-R.com. Nonetheless, he just wrote an article on perfidy, the book by Ben Heck, which exposes the fact that the Zionists, the labor Zionists, the people I call the Sabbatean or Franco-Zionists, worked hand-in-hand with the Nazis to murder the Jews of Europe. That was Ben Heck's very, very brilliant and famous book. It was called Perfidy. And he did an expose of perfidy, and he said, it's the same people, gang. It's the same people, and they're setting you up for another Holocaust. You gotta listen to what happened the last time, because the same gang of maniacs, again, the Israelis might call them leftists, or they may call them Bolsheviks. I call them Sabbateans, but the fact is that they sent their representative Rudolf Kastner to Hungary, where 800,000 Jews could have been saved, and he saved 3,500 of his family and friends and let the rest go to the gas chambers. The order came from Jerusalem. It came from the Zionist organization of the world. I'm thinking of the name. It was so stupid. Tzionut. It doesn't matter. It came from the left-wing Zionist Jews, the ones who are destroying Israel today, caused a Holocaust, and they're going to cause another one. Sochnut Yehudit, the Jewish Agency. I'm so sorry. I'm losing my Hebrew bit. They're going to do it again. And I've got one major writer and an academic and a known academic finally writing somewhat in my style. And that's the best I can do. I've been just so thoroughly defamed by people who don't want me to be right. No matter what, I am right. Okay, you know that, I know that, my readers know that. Everything is heading in the exact direction I said it would head. Every interview you have done with me, go backwards in time, I said it's all heading to this. Now that this is here, you would think somebody would say, well, didn't Barry say that the Vatican would be behind the end of Israel? And now look at this statement coming out of Madrid this week. Why, he was right. No one's going to say it. I'm not going to be believed. So you find me a nice lake, and maybe someone out there gives me a few bucks to open a bait shop, and I'll just silently slink away from the Jewish people. They've already slinked away from themselves anyways.
Why don't you get the names of your website out there and where people can get your books, Barry?
Well, you know, I do have... The books go to Lulu. LULU.com. It says search right in CHAMISH. That's my name. You'll see the books. Get by Gaza first. It's the most up-to-date, and it tells you why any government would be insane enough to give up the Gush Katif. And it'll tell you about all the crooked people in the Israeli right who led their people into the desert, who got them out of their shells and bunkers. And my website, that is Bye-Bye Gaza. My website is theberrychamish.com, and that is www.theberrychamish.com, all one big long word. And as I said, you can write me. I have got not many left. I've got about 20 left. It's a CD ROM. You put it in your computer. It's my lecture in Jerusalem of a year and a half ago, where I explained to people. It's called Zion First: The Vatican's New Crusade Against Jerusalem. My address is Chamish, Chamish, at NetVision, one word, NetVision.net, NET.IL, Chamish at netvision.net.IL. I'll sell you this CD set for $20, and you can understand the Vatican. Oh, boy, I hear that music.
All right, fine. Well, we've just got a few minutes left before we have to let Barry go. But, ladies and gentlemen, we are entering a period, I believe, of chaos and crisis. And the average American is not making any more preparation than the average Israeli for what lies ahead. Because we think it's not going to happen. Just as the Israeli people think it's not going to happen. They've always been able to survive. Well, without divine intervention, I fear they will not. And I fear the same will be true for America. The question is, you know, are the is America and the American people really worthy of God's intervention? And the same might be said of Israel. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Barry, I know how you feel sometimes. You just have to get away from things, but I hope that you'll stick around for a while before you move up to the lake and the bait shop, because we always look forward to having a chance to talk to you, and because certainly you're right on the cutting edge of what's going on, and we want our listeners out across America, indeed across the world, through the miracle of Internet and shortwave and satellite, to hear your wisdom. So stick with us for a while anyway.
You're one of the reasons I am. I mean, let's cut to the chase here. And you're also giving. We're doing weekly reports now. The news is so bad. Why even talk about what happened 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, or even 2 weeks ago? It's a daily downhill battle for Israel's survival, and I have not seen one uphill, one sign that Israel will win this battle. Not even one hopeful sign. And I've been looking for them. Believe me, I've been looking for them.
Well, it's very interesting. I was going through about 100 emails that my son had been saving up for me. And there were at least about half a dozen people who commented. And some of them were certainly not either Jewish or Christian. They were atheists. But they said, put Barry Shamish on more. We always enjoy listening to him. So, you know, Kirsty, I always enjoy having you on, but I was interested how many supporters you have out there. And they're not telling me to get any more of our other regular people on, but the name Barry Shamish came up. So, and I'm sure for every one person who says that, there are probably hundreds out there who are glad we still have you here, and that you're actually assessing what's going on and trying to put things into focus for us. Because the important thing is, there are forces going on behind the scenes, and the world is run by far different people than most people suspect.
Boy, that was needed. Let me tell you, that was really needed. Thank you. Look, Israel's in big trouble. I don't know a way out. Your little pep talk did the trick. We'll keep on doing it for another little while, but I sure do not want to see this war. It's going to be a war to the finish. And people don't understand that not all wars are stopped because the UN stops the wars. Some wars just go on and destroy whole continents, like World War II. Israel might be headed for another World War II.
Well, I fear that there are going to be very terrible things are going to happen. But, you know, I have enough confidence in God that He has a plan. And one way or another, He's going to preserve a remnant of the Jewish people.
Well, not in Israel.
Well, we'll wait and see. God love you. We're out of time. Talk to you later.
You're great. Thank you, Stan. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest this evening, Barry Shamish. I hope you enjoyed the program with him. And Barry has information you're not going to get elsewhere, but I've never found him yet. To come up with facts that were not accurate. So we'll try to have him on a regular basis here, afternoon or evening programs, to keep you abreast of what's happening, because, of course, really in many respects, as it has always been, Jerusalem is the center of the world. Well, right now, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we look to you to help us as we try to finance our 60 different outlets we have across America every week. And some of them are internet, some of them are shortwave, some of them are satellite, but at least we have a voice, and people throughout the world are learning, and Certainly, there's some of the things we have a chance to write. We don't have as much time to write as I wish we did, but because we're doing 5 hours of talk radio a day, plus a weekend program that goes to almost 30 stations, somewhere between 25 and 30 stations. Under any circumstances, we do hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you're interested, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll appreciate your help and support. Now, to begin to put things into their perspective, let me suggest you get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or get the DVD. And incidentally, we are, of course, going to be putting together a special offer where you're going to be able to get 25 copies of my DVD on the Brotherhood of Darkness, and we're going to get them made again. So if you'd like to know how this is going to work, and you've got a very, very special deal on getting 25 copies of Brotherhood of Darkness, just give Mary a call at 1-800-544-8927. But we really want to do that so we can stamp out another 1,000 copies of the DVD. We did this about a year ago, and believe me, they're just about all gone now. And actually, our book is still moving very, very well. People are buying it, and, well, we've got enough probably for another 6 months before we have to reprint it again. But Brotherhood of Darkness has had probably at least 10 different printings. People are beginning to get a picture of what this is all about. We're involved in a spiritual battle. There are secret societies. There are people who are frank Luciferians and Satanists out there. And we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western or Christian or Judeo-Christian civilization. Call it what you will. I mean, so the Christianity came out of the cradle of Judaism, and I believe God has a plan for the remnant of the Jewish people, and I think he has a plan for the remnant of the Christian people. Do not fall into the trap of saying, well, Christians are never going to have to suffer, and all you need to do is read history and find out that they, time and time again, have been misled by their leaders. We have a wonderful book about what happened in Hitler's Germany. It's called Hitler's Cross. It's written by Erwin Lutzer, who is the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church. If you haven't read Erwin Lutzer's Hitler's Cross, you need to get it. We carry Carrie Tenboom's book. We carry Carrie Tenboom's book. It's called The Hiding Place. And if you haven't read it, or you haven't read it recently, you need to get it. And we got this in because we really believe that people need to understand what Christians had to go through under Adolf Hitler. It was Corrie Ten Boom. Corrie Ten Boom. So these books are not expensive. They are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do hope, of course, that you'll want to get a new four-tape set on iodine, our new four-tape set on the Military Commissions Act, and our four-tape set on concentration camps. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they're building concentration camps in America. Halliburton, they're refurbishing the Japanese concentration camps because they don't want us to forget how terrible it was to put people in concentration camps. Do you really believe that? We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, well, the views of our special guest this hour, and that's Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Well, pretty good. Glad to be back again.
Well, it's good to have you back. And, of course, you know, there's all sorts of things. I was just thinking of you as I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and they were talking about how some people think that there should be regulation of hedge funds because, of course, if they were to collapse, it would endanger the stability of the financial structure of the world. It would endanger the stability of the financial structure of the world, but they were reassured by the experts who said, oh, no, there's nothing to worry about. Why, people are going to be able to, regulate. These things can be self-regulating, and people will be able to, you know, by trial and error to find out which ones are safe and which ones are not, and the free market will operate. Here you're talking about $1.4 trillion that's floating around the world going into third world countries or second world countries. Apparently the stock market in Vietnam has gone up 125% just this last year. The Vietnamese stock market is booming. A lot of it's hedge fund money. And the same thing is happening in stock markets throughout the world. Every country in the world is just pouring money out. I mean, they're creating out of nothing. Isn't it wonderful? We can create money just out of nothing, with nothing behind it. We can create all the prosperity we want to. Bob, what's happening, and tell us your thoughts.
Well, I think the danger in hedge funds, more than anything else, is that there is no regulation. And, of course, Secretary of the Treasury, Paulson, who really is the Goldman Sachs is running the Treasury, is what is going on, tells us that these people can discipline themselves. I was in that industry for 28 years, and there's no way that they can discipline themselves. They're just too plain greedy.
I saw where a couple of the executives there at Goldman Sachs got $50 million salaries last year, or maybe those were bonuses. $50 million as an executive of Goldman Sachs, and of course it's their man who's running the U.S. Treasury Department. That's where Henry Paulson came from. So these people give incest a bad name, don't they?
Yeah, and the big secret is that a good part of the money that's made by the large firms on Wall Street is through trading. That's through inside information, and through the business that they get from hedge funds. And they compete very closely with one another for that business, but they are highly dependent upon it at the moment and may well be more in the future. Hedge funds, they leverage themselves. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 to 1. Sometimes it's 8 or 10 or 12 to 1. And sometimes it's a lot more than that. And that's extraordinarily dangerous.
And that's what happened to long-term capital. It almost brought the whole house of cards down here, what, about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is, of course, they're leveraging, and they're getting things, and then they're getting what they bought on leverage to buy more things on leverage. But if this thing ever starts to come down, it's going to destroy this financial house of cards and impoverish people all throughout the world. And with that, of course, will come economic and political chaos. We'll be right back in just a moment. Will you pick up the story there, Bob?
And so if we were to have two or more, hedge funds get in serious trouble. We could have a bowling pin effect or a domino effect on the derivative industry because they're using that quite extensively. Anything that's speculative, they're involved in. And they're very deeply involved in writing options themselves. And also, they usually hold large positions in collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, and ABSs, which are similar. And what those are packaged securities of mortgages. And they vary in nature. Some packages are mixed, all the way from AAA paper down to BBB-. And some are just junk packages, which are BBB-. And over the next 2.5 years, I believe what's going to happen is 60% or more of that paper is not going to perform. And that means that they'll be taking 60% or 70% losses, and they're leveraged. Now, how much each one is, it remains to be seen. So if you bought $1 billion worth of mortgage paper, and you borrowed $900 million to do it, and you lose 60% of your investment, you're in deep doo-doo, that's for sure. And it's nothing to laugh about, but it is extraordinarily dangerous. And government and Wall Street tell us, trust us. Well, I don't trust them as far as I can kick them. And so I think sooner or later it's going to blow up. We're going to have a big diminution in liquidity, and that is just beginning. Now, there is a sea of liquidity out there right now, and part of it comes from central banks through money and credit, and a good part of it comes as well from the Japanese yen carry trade and the Swiss franc carry trade. And as we go through this debacle in the housing market and the problems that we're going to see in these securitized mortgage securities, then a lot of money is going to be lost, so it disappears from the system. And that means that central banks are going to have to increase money and credit more than they have already.
Hold that thought. Hold back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so what Bob is basically saying is that what's going to happen is that there are a lot of things that are going to go belly up. A lot of these hedge funds and their derivatives are going to go belly up, and of course, everything is built upon leverage. I mean, there's over $370 trillion in derivatives. There's only $1.4 trillion in hedge funds, $370 trillion in derivatives. And there's nowhere near that much money in the entire world. So as this whole thing begins to implode, why, of course, the only thing they can do is print more money and then print more money and then print more money to try to keep the house of cards afloat. But how do you keep a house of cards that's floating on water afloat? And, of course, sooner or later it's going to sink. We see what's going on in Zimbabwe today, in Rhodesia, in the government that the United States government and Henry Kissinger installed there. The inflation rate in Rhodesia today in Zimbabwe, 1,200% a year, 100% a month. Teachers recently got a 300% raise, and they said, we can't live with a 300% raise. Just as of yesterday, they stopped all demonstrations, any public gathering. The country is on the basis of chaos because of there is no stability in the currencies. So you pick up the story there, Bob.
Yeah, all you say is true. And now they have banned any kind of meeting or demonstration or protest. And I lived in Zimbabwe for 3 years. And I also lived in South Africa. And, you know, these places that they mentioned, I know very well because I had a business there. So I knew the entire city extraordinarily well and the country as well. And
it was a beautiful, prosperous celebrated country. It was a beautiful, prosperous country.
Oh, it certainly was. It's the most beautiful place I ever lived in. And Mugabe just celebrated his 83rd birthday yesterday. And the country is just simply broke. And now they're having trouble with desertion in their military. What will happen is the people will become so ravenously hungry, they won't care about the consequences, and they will attack the government, and the government will eventually be overthrown. And I know Mugabe quite well. I talked to him many times when he was in jail. And they've got their hands full, but the 27 years now since Mugabe took over.
Since we put him in power, since Henry Kissinger put him in power.
Well, that's true. The guy that did really all the paperwork was Lord, I can't remember his last name, he was a Brit, and he was the one that did it, but Ian Smith sold the country out. Absolutely no question. And he was a British agent from the very beginning. I know he was involved in 65 in the beginnings of UDI. And I met Smith a couple of times. I never got involved in politics there because you don't do that when you're in somebody else's country. But I just got a bad feeling from him from the very beginning. And I knew a lot of people in the police, in the military, because we used to do a lot of shooting. And not animals, but just targets, things like that. And they really didn't care for him that much either. But they had a really solid government, and the country was built up very well. So in the last 27 years, they just run everything right into the ground. And incidentally, the same thing's happening in South Africa.
No question at all. It's you know, they have more murders per capita there than any other place in the world, I'm told. And more rapes. And
I saw figures today. They're talking about 5.3%. They got to be kidding me.
Right.
Unemployment in South Africa is over 50%. In Zimbabwe, it's around
80% unemployment. And, you know, it just, people can't imagine that could happen. But these were civilized societies. I mean, they were prosperous societies, and yes, there was some injustice there. But in Rhodesia, in Zimbabwe, there was no racial discrimination. The blacks had the same rights as the white people, that they could own land, they could have a business, they could do whatever they wanted to. But there were people in our country who were intent upon destroying Zimbabwe. There were people in our country who were intent upon destroying Africa. There were people in our country who were intent upon destroying the United States. And I think it's only a matter of time before that happens, and I think the day is drawing close where we're going to see chaos in our streets. To pick up the story, Bob.
Well, let that be a lesson to us, because we're heading in the same direction. They're just far further along the road. And everything happens quickly today. In 1980, things might take 10 or 20 years to happen, but today, they take a year or two. Everything is speeded up, and that's because we have the internet, and it's changed our whole lives. And it's only 10 or 11, 12, 13 years old in general usage. And so things get more explosive faster. But what we see here now with the breaking of the real estate bubble, which everybody poo-pooed, and the international forecaster was dead on, picked the top of the market, just like we did of the stock market in early April of 2000. And we're just really beginning to go down in that market. And we've got at least 2.5 years before we hit bottom. And there's going to be a lot of unhappy people, a lot of unemployment. And, of course, a lot of unemployment's not 4.6%. It's over 13%. And inflation is not 2.7%, it's over 10%. And that's how the United States government covers it up, because people in America, like in many other places, are just plain dumb. And, you know, I wrote a piece today about the educational system. Again, and as you know, I write about it frequently because, you know, it's the heart of a nation. You know, we need people coming behind us who are well educated and understand the things that they have to make our country successful. And with this No Child Left Behind, what they've done is that they have made the testing system the end all, and all the children study for is to pass that state test. And the teaching profession and the administrators have made it as soft as they can so that more people will pass.
In other words, you dumb down the test so that people look to be smarter, but they're really not.
Exactly. And they teach down to the lowest common denominator. And that's borne out by the national tests, which show that these children, on average, are supposed to have just under a 3 point, which is a B. It's ridiculous. The average is probably a C. And that would probably want to be a 2.7 or 2.6. And, you know, they're just running around in circles. I have a good insight into them because my daughter's a teacher. And she fills me in on everything that's going on. And there's a whole field of information the children are not exposed to because they're off getting prepared to pass the criteria for the state. And so they don't get geography, and they don't get history, and they don't get this, and they don't get that. So my daughter, in the evening, teaches them all the other things that they don't get, that the other kids aren't getting. And it's just a disgrace.
Okay, fine. Well, certainly, now, where are we going financially? Certainly, gold and silver have been moving up very, very strongly this week, and the stock market has certainly been sort of moving sideways, even down a little bit. Do you think that the stock market's topped out, or do you think it's going to keep going up for a time?
It's hard to tell on the market because it's so heavily manipulated. But during this year, once it becomes obvious that the real estate market is a serious problem, then the market will go down. They'll try to hold it at 9,000 on the Dow, but I don't think they'll be successful. I think we'll have a 50% retracement back down to 72. 68 again, where it was 4 years ago, and we could go substantially lower depending upon what transpires. And interest rates have to go higher because we have to attract capital because of our tremendous daily balance of payments deficit. It's about $3.5 billion a day. But the good part is that money migrates to other areas, and it has in commodities. They've done well, and so has in gold and silver. And I expect that we are only in the first phases of that market, which has been going on now for 5 to 6 years. And I think commodities will peter out before gold does, but probably over the next 4 or 5 years, commodities should do well. But gold and silver are going to be the real great performers. And I think that they are just in phase one of at least three phases. And phase one would be up to the former highs. And that would be 850 gold. And most likely $25 silver. There was a reason silver went to $50 in 1980, and that was there were a group of people who did capture a good part of the free trading silver in the market and forced prices to an abnormally high level. And I think $25 would have been appropriate, but it could be higher.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with our good friend, Bob Chapman. All right. right, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman. We're talking about what's happening. He thinks that gold will go to $850. He thinks that silver will go to $25. Pick the story up there.
And I'm going to come back and fill in the pieces, too. Just to catch up now with inflation since 1980, gold would have to go to $2,150 an ounce. 5-6 years ago, that figure was 1,700. And two other long-term prognosticators like myself, Mary Schultz and Jim Sinclair, believe 16 to 1650 was the number, but I don't think they've kept their figures up. And neither did I until just the last week. And so that would bring it up to where it should have been before, prior to being suppressed by our government and other central banks. Now, usually what happens in markets, you'll usually get a doubling from there. And that would send gold up on a speculative basis to over $4,000 an ounce. And that performance at that level, which would be phase three, would be dependent upon the events at the time. We can't project exactly where things will go because we just don't know. It may be considerably higher, or it may be $3,500. And so we'll figure that out when we get there. Today, what's going on the market, and I've been watching all the indicators very closely, and I know what to watch after 47 years, and being the largest gold silver stockbroker in the world for 28 years prior to starting the International Forecaster 17 years ago. We got to look at the Commitment of Traders report, which shows the small speculators, the large speculators, and what they call the commercials, who are essentially the insiders. And the insiders cut back their short positions by about two-thirds. And then just recently, gold started to move up, which is against them, because they're perpetually short. They very seldom go long the market. And they have a habit of averaging their shorts. In other words, if you shorted the market, bet it was going to get down at 650, and you were wrong, you short some more at 675, and if it goes to 700, you short some more until you find a top. Well, you never know where the top is. And so, that's what they're doing big time. And this time, they've got caught with the pants down. And I just hope they don't realize what they've done. And I hope they don't realize until we get to 730 where it was last April. And if we can break through 730, which I think we can fairly easily, I think in the short term we get a shot at 850. And if we don't, we'll have it before the end of the year. And so that will be the end of phase one. And that will start bringing the public and professionals into the market, particularly if interest rates rise and if we have a fall in the stock market. And if those happen, if those things happen, professionals and others will be looking for a place to go to make money. And if the only thing that's going up is commodities and gold and silver, well, I don't care. That's where they're going to be.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob thinks that because gold is on the rise at the present time, and that it has certainly an opportunity to, the first phase would be end about $2,000 an ounce, and then they could go up from there to $3,500 to $4,000 an ounce. And what's going to happen as far as silver is concerned? Do you have any thoughts on that?
As far as what is concerned?
As far as silver.
Well, silver will go up as long as we have inflation. There's two basic things that make gold go up. One of them is inflation, and the other is deflation. Silver has one thing that makes it go up, and that's inflation. It's an inflation hedge. Gold is both. And that's a characteristic that gold has, which means in the long run, it's more versatile. It's the only currency in the world. And that's not true of silver. So as long as we're having hyperinflation, and we will have it, they will admit to it. Last time, in 1980, they admitted to 13.5%. Inflation was much higher, but that's what they admitted to. And they changed the way of doing the numbers in 1985-86. The promulgation of that began under Volcker during 83, 4, and 5. And I know people who worked for the federal government at the time who were in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they told me that people just outright quit. I mean, lots of people, hundreds of them, because they were so disgusted, because they knew that the government was going to Mickey Mouse all the figures. And with inflation, they used what they call substitution and hedonics. And to make a long story short, they rigged the figures in their favor, which would be lower inflation. And so silver will go up with high inflation, as well as gold. And so will other commodities, assets that haven't already moved up. Housing's already moved up, so it won't happen there. Housing will go down. You know, it's just like a wave. Each part of the economy has its play, its place. And that's what the game of musical chairs is right now. And there's going to be tremendous amounts of money made in gold and silver. It will only be made by 5% of the population, because the rest of them are too dumb to think for themselves. And so they're not going to make anything. And the people who do participate and do make money really aren't making a lot of money, because on all their other assets, they might lose anywhere between 50 and 90%, just like we did in the 1930s. So what they're doing is staying even, maybe getting ahead, maybe doing very well. I mean, if you buy bullion, it's a one-to-one game. If you buy numismatic coins and gold and silver stocks, it's a different kind of game. There's leverage there. So it all depends on how you approach it and what's suitable for you.
Well, now, do you think
people 85 years old do not do things that people 45 do?
Well, what do you think that, for instance, there's an opportunity for some very real large gains in gold and silver stocks or not?
Well, let me just take the MS64 St. Gaudens. It's around $1,000. That's what we'll call it. But it's in that vicinity. It's probably $1,100 or something like that. But let's call it $1,000.
And that's an MS60 or 66?
No, 64.
64, okay.
Yeah. And that coin, and most of the coins that are numismatic, are selling today at 20% of the value that they were in the late 1970s. And the reason for that, and that phenomenon has happened in the gold shares as well. Two outstanding shares, Agnico Eagle and Silver Standard, which we recommended at $5 and $1.50, and they're 40 and 35 respectively right now, should be selling for $200. Now, why is that? Because if you were 25 years old in 1980, you're 51 years old now, and there's a 0.1% chance that you may have realized what was going on with gold and silver at that time. All the other people since then who are younger than that have no knowledge of that. And so that market hasn't woken up yet. But when it does, it will be explosive. So they're super, super cheap buys.
All right, fine. And first, where do you anticipate that MS64 coin will go?
Well, last time at 850, it was $5,000. We're not that far away from 850. So it's way behind. And I think it'll catch up. It could go $10,000 or $15,000.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our good friend Bob Chapman. And of course, if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bob Chapin. Bob, you were just saying that you think that these MS-64 coins then could really do very, very well here as gold really begins to move up.
Well, I think the whole numismatic area can. And I believe that silver bags, that the 90% silver bags will do well. They have the least amount of premium. And in the shares, they really haven't, like the numismatics, haven't started to really move yet. I mean, in the exploration stocks, some of them have gone from 50 cents to $4 or $5, but not many of them. And there's one stock in particular, Rainy River, is around 450, 425 Canadian. And they've got very good draw results, and shortly they'll be in about 4 or 5 weeks, they'll be coming out with their reserve figures. This is the first preliminary reserve figures, and I think they'd be quite good. And if I'm correct, I mean, in 1980, the stock would have been selling for $40. So, I mean, there's your comparison. And you want to know what the stocks did during that time? There were about 30 stocks that went from around a dollar to $30 or $35 or $40. And there were two in South Africa, which will not repeat itself because of conditions there. Two of them went from 35 cents to $51 and $55 respectively. So this is the kind of action you're looking at. I mean, people could walk away with fortunes.
Okay, but what you're saying is we're living in exciting but certainly uncertain times, because an awful lot of people, you know, if we get a market crash, you know, and people are overextended, and certainly the people throughout the world are plunging into the stock markets in their own countries. The people in China are plunging into the stock markets. The people in Vietnam and in India, I mean, they think that, you know, that the good times are never going to stop, and they want to get in there and get invested before things, you know, while they can still make a fortune. But they're going to be investing in regular stocks, and you think those are going to be in for a surprise?
Yes, and the reason why they are selling dollars and euros and pounds and Swiss francs and going into local currencies and buying into their stock market and their bond market is mostly because they want to capture the yield in the bond market. If 10-year
hold on that right there for just a moment. We'll be right
sure.
back with Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob was explaining why people are going in, are selling their dollars and euros and going into local currencies and investing locally. We'll pick the story up there.
If the U.S. paper, like the 10-year, is selling at 4.68, where it closed today, then a bond, say, from Brazil is probably yielding 7.5% to 8%. And what people, because they're confident, are doing is they are chasing the higher yield. Now, the yield is higher for a reason. And that reason is that the history of the economy and the political situation in those countries that have these higher yields are such that there's a premium, and there's a premium there for good reason. You pay or get more for your money, but do you? I have always found that chasing a yield is an invitation to disaster, because you get what you pay for. And my recommendation for bond buyers is to buy Swiss franc government bonds, and they don't yield 4.68%. They yield 1.125%. And so you can see the difference.
Yeah, but they got a stable currency. That's the difference.
And they always have had since 1856. So, you know, which do you do? My mother's money, were I a bond buyer, would be in Swiss francs. And it wouldn't be in the Brazilian real or the Argentinian peso or the Mexican peso and so on and so forth. Because these are exporting countries, and they are at the mercy of selling to another market. And most everybody sells to the United States and Europe, particularly the United States. And if you notice, the growth in the fourth quarter in Mexico, which sends 85% of its exports to the United States, their GDP fell to 3.3%. And last year on Toto, it was 4.8%. And what it's going to be this year, I don't know, but the economy is slowing down. And when economies slow down, the companies don't make as much money. There's layoffs. And it feeds on itself, just like it will in the United States. And if I was long the bolster in Mexico City, I would be taking profits. I wouldn't be buying their bonds. And I wouldn't be doing that in most any place anyway, because all the markets are overpriced now. And so the gist of the whole thing is you never chase the yield, because you only get what you pay for.
Well, don't you think that people ought to really be getting into a very, very defensive position at the present time? Because, of course, things are really very, very uncertain. In other words, certainly we don't know what's going to happen to our currency. And certainly we may see gold at $3,000 or $4,000 an ounce. But won't that in many ways reflect a collapse of the American currency?
Dollar goes down.
Right.
Gold goes up.
Right.
It doesn't get any more complicated than that. And they don't teach those things, not even in graduate school, for people who are getting their master's in business. There's more important things for them to learn. And there's a great ignorance that's been abounded since the Second World War in teaching. I mean, everything that I talk about in this program, I did not learn in college. I mean, I learned nothing about what I'm talking about. I learned because I went out and found out on my own. And they try to keep this a secret. Who is they? The central banking system, which is privately owned. And the people on Wall Street. And they don't want the public. They don't even want people within their own industry to know about this, because they want their research departments to tell these people what to buy. So the salesman zombie comes to work every day, and he'll say, our research department has said that these four stocks are going to be the best buys over the short term, the next couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, and you should buy them. So they call their clients up. So the research department says we buy A, B, C, and D. And so the people buy them. They don't want brokers to think. And people like me are dangerous to their industry, because I wander around and people ask me, and I say, oh, no, no, that's not what I'm doing, because I think that they're wrong. And so I was never very popular in that industry, because I was always going in the opposite direction. And I lasted 28 years, and at that time the average broker lasted 7 years. Nowadays they last about a year and a half.
Well, we've got Tom calling here from Florida, waiting patiently on the line. Hi, Tom. Did you have a question for our guest?
Mr. Chapman, have you done
I can't hear him.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
Have you done a time frame study on the the Rockefellers shut down, when they do the final shutdown, you know, like when they quit supplying the stores and the fuel stations?
Well, what are you talking about, Tom? Tom?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about? They stopped supplying the stations.
The gas stations.
Well, there's lots of gas in the gas stations. Are you suggesting they're not going to supply gas to the gas stations?
What's that?
Are you suggesting they're not going to supply gas to the gas stations?
Well, I'm saying that when they don't, you know, when they really want to collapse this. And we're harvesting wheat with a scythe for the communist Chinese soldier with a .47 pointed at us. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, fine.
Mr. Chapman, did you do a time study or something like that on that situation?
Well, I think there's many factors, and that's certainly one of them. That is the supply of energy. And in order to exacerbate the situation, it certainly would be in the realm of thought, looking at the antithesis side of things, that the Rockefellers would do something like that to make things even more chaotic than they were.
Do you see?
And when you have a situation like that, when energy is not available, and of course there's a lot of ramifications to that, which would be heat, light, air conditioning, and then you could have food withheld from markets, and supermarkets only have 3 days worth of food in them, and of course it's all gone in one day once people realize that there's a problem. That adds to the chaos as well. And this is what these people want. And when you have a situation like that, the thing that you've got to do is demand that government act and stop them from doing what they're doing. And if government does not do that, you have to take the government into your own hands.
All right, fine. Thanks, Tom. And let's see, we have somebody else calling here. We'll have them on the line in just a minute. Well, I think that we're certainly looking into a situation where we could see, certainly if there was a major major attack on America, a nuclear attack, or maybe a major epidemic, or maybe even some sort of a major cataclysmic event, storms, hurricanes, earthquakes. Why, of course, there would be a possibility of really the imposition of martial law in America. And should that happen, I would think that the very structure of our society would begin to break down. What would your thoughts on that be?
Well, I agree, and that's basically what I was talking about. But it could be accelerated by these people who have the ability, as the gentleman just pointed out, to do the expedition of that process. And if the government doesn't react, you have to react on your own. And that would be as a people.
And this, of course, our plea to people is begin making plans so that you'll be able to function on your own, certainly without the government. And make the preparations so that you'll have food and water and this medical supplies and the things that you need. And wherever you are, you know, in this country, we don't know what's going to happen, but we're living in very uncertain times. Well, let's go to Henry, who's calling in here from Connecticut. Hi, Henry. How are you doing?
Yes, hello. Hi. Two questions for Mr. Chapman. Second one is about Bush. The first one has to do with grains and commodities. After you say ethanol might be useless or whatever, and I think you're right. But is it possible that grains as well as gold may go up, particularly maybe soybean and corn within like 2008? And if it is, would it have reached its peak? And let's say, would it be worthy somebody to go, you know, would it go up higher where somebody, let's say, start investing in 2008, let's say they can't in 2007? Would it continue to go higher, or most likely after 2008 with the grains like soy and corn would be going down after that? And I have one other question after.
All right. Well, what do you think about the possibility of...
Well, I answer that question in tomorrow morning's International Forecaster in the commodity section. But to briefly go over it, corn just broke out to a new high. Corn is high for three reasons. Number one, there's been a drought to a partial drought, and so the crop wasn't as good as they would have liked it to be. And second of all, inventory's been worked down to a lower level. And number three, we have the ethanol offtake. And, of course, it's stupid because all they have to do is allow sugar to come into the country and instead of it being kept out. And even if it was only for consumption for ethanol, sugar is a better way to go, and I won't go into all the details.
Right, okay, don't, yeah.
But corn is going higher. How much, I don't know.
Right.
Wheat's going higher. Now, this coming year, a ballpark figure is that Cutback Day, the farmers, have cut back about a third in their production of soybeans and moved it over to corn. And
they didn't say why.
Pardon me?
If they didn't say why or you know, we...
Well, they see what I just talked about.
All right. Okay.
I mean,
yeah, right.
Farmers know.
They see a rising price, so they're going to get into corn because that's where the money is. If
right, something. That's right. They can get more money for their crop. Right. Okay.
Right. So I think, as we come into the season, which will be in 4 or 5 months, that there'll be a topping out in corn. Maybe it'll be next month. I don't know.
Right.
But I do know corn is broken out. It will go higher here. How much, I don't know. Wheat will follow. Soybeans will kind of hang around. And soybeans will probably have their move in June, July, and August. And they're around 775, 750 right now, a bushel. And they could go back to $12. One of the interesting things about soybeans is that every time it's rallied in history, silver has rallied as well with it.
Oh, really?
I don't know who's leading who, but anyway, you can stick that in your metal inventory.
Every time silver has rallied, I mean, went up. Like last year, silver went up to $17, by the way. I know you know that, but I'm saying silver went up to $17 and it dropped back. It looks like it's trying to be very, very bullish, and it's going to go back up to $16 now. It's already $14 now. So every time silver rallies and becomes bullish, soybeans do too, as far as the commodity futures go.
Is that right, Bob?
That's correct.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Henry?
Okay, yeah, the other thing I want to... Okay, yeah, the other question has to do with Bush. On another program, you said something about with Bush, if I told you, couldn't say on the air certain perversions and something else with President Bush, and I can't say so-and-so-and-so-and-so. What specifically would you know to say that other people don't know? I mean, because if he's gay, I don't think people really care, gay or straight. If he's one of those guys like the congressman, you know, they get beaten or whipped, you know, that's only...
Well, he and his father both.
Yeah, you said his father is worse than he is. Now, do you mean in terms of dealings with the Illuminati and evil, or do you mean in terms of sexual stuff?
Because he doesn't have the brains that the son has. I mean, the son doesn't have the brains of the father.
That's right.
The point is that they're both bisexuals and they're both pedophiles.
Well, when you mean pedophile, you mean really young. You're not talking about like that Foley nonsense with the 16.
Yes,
you're talking
of
really
course.
young.
That's true. And so is Henry Kissinger. But there's a whole bunch of them there. That's why you have a
section. You mean really young, you're not talking about
I really don't want to get too much into let's say there's some sexual aberrations there, but thanks so much for calling. Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Anyway, we'll leave the subject because I know you want to. What would you like to talk about next?
Well, of course, what you're suggesting that is that people seriously consider getting invested in, certainly you mentioned several gold stocks, one gold stock, one silver stock, and you mentioned at least one small stock that deals with Rainy River. There are lots of the stocks out there, though. There's Hecla, Coeur d'Alene, a lot of these silver stocks. Do you think that they have a possibility of running up? Or should people just stick with one or two, like Silver Standard and Agnico Eagle? Or should they be diversified if they're going to buy stocks?
Well, it's just like coins. It all depends on what's suitable for you. You don't buy something for an 85-year-old person or a 75-year-old person that you buy for a 45 or 50-year-old person, because unless they're multimillionaires, so we'll leave all them out. And you have to use prudence, and so there's different things for different people. But I don't buy or I don't recommend many stocks right now. I think we've got about 7, and that's it. And you know, every once in a while, I'll recommend one or two or three or four more. Sometimes I'll call one out for unusual reasons. One of them is failure, and the other one is management problems, usually. A failure in the sense that they don't get what they're looking for, or their mind is starting to run out, or whatever. And so the people who read the forecaster, who are subscribers, they get all that information first. And what I do is I call the subscribers and tell them what we're buying. And I don't put it in the publication until everybody's been called. And that's one heck of a lot of phone calls, let me tell you. And I do that personally because people reproduce the publication and they distribute it to others. And I've been told by experts that I am the most copied publication in the world. And with that said, I think it's a responsibility of mine to go to the people first and tell them what we're recommending, and then after everybody's been called, then we put it in the publication.
Okay, right.
So they've already got a position.
We're getting to the end of the line. I want you to give your telephone number and how people can get the international forecast.
They can call toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Or they can go to our site, and that address is the International Forecaster.com. The International Forecaster, FORECASTER.com. All they have to do is apply, and we'll either send them an email copy or hard copy. Email we publish twice a week, but Wednesdays and Saturdays. Hard copies twice a month.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Bob Chapman, and certainly we look forward to the program, newsletter coming twice a week, and I always faithfully read it. And these are exciting times. We're beginning to see gold and silver break out, and as we've often used the analogy of the canary in the mine shaft, when the canary drops dead, you want to get out of the mine. When gold and silver begin moving up as they have this last week, something big is afoot. Bob, do you think that this is a prelude to or suggests that they're anticipating hostilities? Do you think it's because simply there are too many people going into gold and silver, they can't manipulate the price any longer? Do you think it suggests that they're going to see the demise of the dollar, the beginning of the demise of the dollar? What do you think the major forces...
I think it's all of the above. I mean, it is many more things. And that is that production of both gold and silver are falling, and demand is rising. And those are the fundamentals on their own, even if we didn't have any untoward events such as wars and things like that. These metals have got so much going for them, and nothing has happened in the last 50 years like this. This is going to be the biggest bull market of any bull market in the history of modern markets and economics.
Well, if you had your choice between going into gold or silver, not I know you think we should be in both, but if you had your choice of gold or silver, which would you go into right now?
Well, there's more leverage in silver, but I feel personally comfortable with gold, because I know if I'm wrong and things head the other way, I get more protection in gold than I do in silver.
All right, fine. Well, we're just about out of time. Your final thought. They've got about 30 seconds to wrap up the program for tonight.
Well, as I've been saying on the program for over 5 years, probably longer than that, get out of debt. Get rid of those credit cards, revolving debt. Pay off your cars. This year and next, one of you may be unemployed, and you don't want to lose your house. And house prices are going down, and you're going to go into negative equity and all those terrible things, and so get your financial house in order. If you don't have money to buy gold and silver related assets, that's okay. At least you'll survive, and you'll do that by being out of debt.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate so much you being with us, and we'll look forward to having you with us. I think the 5th of March is going to be the next time you'll be on Radio Liberty. That's the afternoon Genesis program.
Well, thank you, and I will be there.
Good night. God bless.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this evening, Bob Chapman. I hope you enjoy his commentary. I think we're living in exciting times, but I think we're living in dangerous times as well. And, of course, we always make suggestions that you begin preparing financially for the difficult times that lie ahead. We also want you to prepare spiritually for the difficult times that lie ahead, because behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. Well, of course, certainly we'd like to suggest you get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want to understand what's going on financially, you need to get our talk on the financial tsunami. That's the financial tsunami, and you can get the syllabus with that. That's got a lot of fascinating material with it. Certainly we have our talk on Iraq, the untold story, the real reason we're in Iraq, and we have a syllabus with that. Sustainable development, a video, a score tape set, and then, of course, the syllabus. So you find that we really have syllabuses and talks on many issues that you need to be able to begin making preparations for the difficult times, the very difficult times that lie ahead. If you have not laid in your supply of a long-term food, or you've actually got a catalog, and as with so many people, they've got catalogs, but they haven't been motivated to do anything, everything points to the fact that we're going to be at war with Iraq, and within several months. How soon? No one knows. But unless there is a miraculous overthrow of the existing Iraqi government, and this is a possibility, and I would pray that that would happen. But if we get into a war with Iraq, it's going to have terrible effects here at home. So begin getting your financial house in order, get your spiritual house in order, and then batten down the hatches. I think that most people are going to be not going to be prepared for what happens. I think a lot of Christians are so certain they're going to be raptured before anything bad happens that if terrible things do happen, why, of course, they're going to begin to lose their faith. And this is what happened in Germany. This is what happened in France. This is what happened in England after the Second World War. And when I was over there in 1954, the churches were empty. Why? Because, of course, they'd been betrayed by their leaders who'd given them a false message. And if you've not yet read the book by Erwin Lutzer entitled Hitler's Cross, you need to get it. You need to understand what happened to the Christian church under the Nazis. As you read it, it's like deja vu all over again, and believe me, Adolf Hitler used Romans 13 and advocated it being taught in the churches to neutralize any opposition to the totalitarian state. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get things like the Satanic Crimes, the new book we're carrying, Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil, and our four tape set with Malachi Martin. You want to get the videos? They sold their souls for rock and roll. If you haven't seen it, you need to. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, and they're available in video or in DVD. You need to have this information, and you need to get it to others so they can begin to understand the spiritual forces that are energizing everything going on in the world today. To understand the background to so many of these secret societies or semi-secret societies, I suggest one excellent video. It's called The Dark Side of the Bohemian Grove. Actually, it comes in DVD form. The Dark Side of the Bohemian Grove. And, of course, we have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, and anybody who asks for it will be glad to send you the pages from the Bohemian Grove's own publication, talking about how they worship the owl. They have a 40-foot owl before which they have a feigned human sacrifice. At least they tell it it's a feigned human sacrifice every single year. And you'll see the leaders of our country with their black robes and their black hoods and their candles and pagan chants. Well, we're out of time. Our number 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty.